Morning Show with Peaches and DJ Motai.
What's going down? It's your homie Dope Beezy, the Southeast Beast.
What's going on, man? It's your boy Jack Freeman, H-Town representative.
It's your boy D-Lo, man.
It's Cav the Don, man.
What's good? Space City, the great city. It's your boy Roots Williams.
Hi, this is Booker T, five-time WCW champion, and you're listening to the Brad Gilmore Show. Now, can you dig that, sucker?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Brad Gilmore Show.
On demand.
We have Peaches and DJ Motai on the phone with me right now. I'm podcasting from home, guys. I had to call in a sick day. I had to, you know, take a moment to kind of relax during my holiday break. I hope y'all are doing the same. How y'all doing today?
Nobody cares what's wrong with you.
Peaches, always something with you.
She cut you off. She's like, I'm tired of this motherfucker talking.
Trying to get sympathy talking about you at home. Nobody cares.
Okay, Peaches. Well, how I care about you. Okay, how's your Thanksgiving been?
It was cool.
It was cool. What'd you do?
I went over my aunt and she made me some crab legs because I had a taste for it. So I ate crab legs.
Well, that sounds good. Motai, how was your Thanksgiving?
I ate way too much, man. I went to a Thanksgiving buffet at Landry's.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Yep, I ate like way too much, man.
I
ate for free.
But hey, eating for free is not bad. I had two Thanksgivings. I had Thanksgiving on Thursday and Friday, and I enjoyed both of them.
Yeah, I also went up to San Antonio to visit my cousin in the National Guard. So that was cool, man. Got to see some family.
Well, we have a good show for y'all today, though. This is like our holiday special. We're gonna play two interviews that have never been played in full. But first, I want to talk a little bit about something that happened. We're doing this podcast right now on Sunday. Y'all are hearing it Monday morning at 8 a.m. But yesterday, last night, I was at the Space City Beat Battle. Shout out to T. Piper and Hash Brown. But when I was there, I reloaded my Twitter feed and or refreshed it rather. And I saw some rather disturbing news, and I thought it was fake at first, but then I found out it was real. Fast and Furious star Paul Walker died yesterday in a car crash.
Yeah, no, I thought it was fake, too, and I was like, no. And I saw it.
Brad FaceTimed me and was like, guess what?
Yeah. I was like, yeah, Paul Walker died.
That, to a lot of people, that was some crucial stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I love the Fast and Furious movies, like, and I know you probably do too, Motai. And, like, an on-running joke on this show is that your influence, Motai, is the Fast and Furious soundtrack from Tokyo Drift. But, like, even though Paul Walker wasn't in that movie. But it was just so sad, man. And then, like, for him to die in a car crash, of all things, you know what I mean? Like,
how ironic is that, right?
Yeah.
Right.
That irony is crazy, but you know, God bless Paul Walker, you know. I know, you know, we don't know him personally, but our condolences go out to his family because that made me sad, and they're right in the middle of filming Fast and Furious 7.
Yep.
And it's just like, man, like what a time. Like what a crazy time to go, man.
And what's even worse than that was he was at his charity event.
Yep.
Yeah.
He was leaving. I think he was letting his friend test drive his car or something like that. That's what I heard.
Oh, man. Yeah, I know he and another guy died, right? Didn't his friend die as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a passenger. I think it was his car then. I don't know. That's what I heard. But, yeah, it's sad, man.
Yeah, very sad. Very sad, but, you know, and right here at the holidays. So, like I said, the Brad Gilmore Show sends our condolences out to the family of Paul Walker. And hopefully, people on Twitter, stop saying Paul Wall died. I'm seeing Paul Wall died.
No, they're not saying Paul Wall died. They said Paul Walker, but they have a picture of Paul Wall.
Oh, God. I'm seeing all kinds of people say Paul Wall and putting Paul Wall. It's Paul Walker. It's a sad thing. Don't make any jokes yet. You know what I mean? I'm seeing people saying too fast, too soon, and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, don't make jokes yet. He was a good guy. He, you know, he has some good movies. I love Takers, you know. I love all his movies. But anyway, moving on from that, The Brad Gilmore Show, like I said, we're going to be playing y'all a couple interviews today from The RZA and from Chameleon Air, things that have never been aired in full on The Brad Gilmore Show while we're on our little holiday break. We're taking a little holiday break, DJ Motai, Peaches, and, you know, we're about to get back in full swing. Next Monday, you'll have your regular Brad Gilmore Show on demand with brand new interviews. And also tonight, y'all can catch me at the Debonair Lounge. Cafe 4212, 4212 Alameda Road. Motai, last Monday was so great, wasn't it?
Oh, it got real.
Peaches, you missed it.
we had
like top three 2011 performance of all time. You know, beautiful women. Great. Jim Beam was in the house, and I kept calling him Jack Daniels. It was great.
Yeah, no, that was hilarious. You're like making jokes of whiskey or whatever it is, company, and not even using the right name.
I thought it was Jack Daniels, Peaches, and then I was told after the whole night was over, after I've been saying Jack Daniels on the mic all night, I was told that it was Jim Beam. I was like, oh, well, that's what I get for not drinking.
Huh? There was a sponsor there?
Yeah. We had Jim Beam come out and like giving out shots, but the whole time I was calling him Jack Daniels. And I was like, well, that's what I get for not drinking.
Yeah.
Well, you got anything coming up, DJ Motai?
I do. There's nothing confirmed, but I'm pretty sure there's going to be more and more gigs in December, you know, trying to get some more gigs, trying to get some more work for the Christmas holiday.
Well, aren't you playing the Houston Scratch Off?
Oh yeah, that's right. What date is that again?
December the 20th. I'm hosting 20th. The Houston Scratch Off, which is like a DJ.
I'm gonna come for that.
Yeah, you got to come for that. And Motai's in it. It's gonna be good. It's at Mango's.
It'll be at Mango's.
December the 20th. Mango's, Motai. That's our old home, pretty much, right?
Yeah, that was. I remember those days.
That was home base for a while.
I was listening to Renewable Energy today, 2011's first album.
Oh, wow.
Man.
A teacher from our high school texted me this morning, said he was listening to 2011 on his road trip today. So we're just all 2011'd up today. This is just, you know what, Motai, you know what we should do now that we're talking about 2011?
We should play some 2011.
We should play some 2011. Peaches, yeah. Do you want to say anything?
No.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Are you positive?
Yes.
Okay, with that being said, we're going to play some 2011 on the Brad Gilmore Show on demand. Y'all enjoy these interviews from the RZA and from Chameleon Air. Never been played in their entirety. Some of them never been heard. So y'all enjoy these interviews. DJ Motai, we're going to play some 2011. And Peaches is going to keep saying no to me when I ask her if she has anything to say. All right,
no.
y'all enjoy the rest of y'all's holiday break, Peaches and Motai, and listeners, and
Chris, you too,
and me too,
and
Christmas.
Don't ever FaceTime me, and then the connection disappears, and then you don't even try to FaceTime me back. You jerk.
Hey, we'll talk about that off the air, okay? Y'all have tuned into the Brad Gilmore Show on demand, and y'all listen to us in 2011. Peace, y'all.
Damn, girl, saw you cross the bar, now I'm your fan, girl. No more drinks for me, this my one chance, girl. The way you wear that dress, wanna be your man, girl. I'm just playing, girl, playing, girl. Go out to your house, set yourself a curtain, what them shits about. Tempur-Pedic, Sealy Posturepedic.
To Egyptian cotton, so the silk will have you spoil your riding. Got our lips locking and our feet touching. Shaka Khan, I'm about to tell you something good. Have you been on California King, moving around his bed like it was a damn boxing ring? Doing crazy things, forget about our slumber. But after this, you gon' have a real sleep number. Hoot lordy, bed shaking, looking bad in that red dress like Satan. I mean, satin. Wait, is that the fabric? Come a little closer, I just wanna grab it. Oh, yeah, girl, that feels nice. Oh, feel these sheets, yeah, I know they feel right. Now you're laughing, but not for too long. Open the door and see the bed you're about to get on.
Go out to your house.
I wanna know about your thread count. Me and you in the room and it go down. Yeah, I'll see you in that red skirt. Now take it off and baby, we can do work. No sheets, on top of a cover girl, don't stop. Keep rock till 2 or 3 o'clock. Like, now what would you do for a Klondike? That thing tight, it's a good look. I can flip it like a page in a good book. The ball solid and the head right. Got your body shaking now, real water bed light. That sound nice, I'm a fan girl. Let's make a flick on the man girl, huh. I can't lie and you're so damn fine. I gotta have it like a rabbit on soul of the slime.
Go out to your house, satin silver curtain, what them shits about. Tempur-Pedic, Sealy Posturepedic.
Since when your friend told you no, but your ass couldn't listen, cause she had that kind of thing that was super tight, and she gave that kind of feeling that was super right with no lights, huh. But everybody say she wrong for me, cause when she out, she don't pick up the phone for me. All my friends say that they just tryna be my homie, when they say my new girl kinda seem a little phony. I don't know, cause if she is, that be a low blow. But goddamn, way shawty give a low blow. I don't even see girls walk by no more. I ain't never seen girls bounce like yo before. I just wanna know, am I stupid for staying? Or am I just attracted to the game that she playing? Or do I like that body in the bed where I'm laying? Or we just having sex? Or is it love that we making? Are you taking? Or am I just a mess around? It's kinda funny after all the girls I mess around. I look up in the mirror and I see a lesson now. I guess karma laughing at me, learn my lesson now, huh?
So burn, baby, burn, baby, burn me, burn.
With therapy, girls take care of me. Anytime I needed you, I know that you be there for me. Light my love carefully, your smile's like a flare to me. Hold on to you forever, you the girl that made a man of me. Sorted as a fan of me, filling my life randomly. Now we sip mimosas, sitting underneath a canopy. If you ever damage me, you be there to banish me. Had it been that long, but man, I'd be dead as she. Ain't got me feeling like a crack addict, crack addict.
Cause I feel you,
and I ain't mad at it, mad at it.
Cause I need you.
And my life getting high up off the ground. Cause this love slow burns every time you come around. So burn,
baby, burn, baby, burn, baby, burn me forever. Burn.
Hey guys, this is Vinzio, and you're tuning in to the Bride Gilmore Show, Mondays at 8 a.m.
What's up, everybody? This is Brad Gilmore, the Brad Gilmore Show. I'm sitting here with the Camillitary General.
Camillitary Mine.
I'm sitting with Chameleonaire right here, man.
Already, man.
How you feeling, man?
Feeling as good as I possibly could.
I know you've had some technical difficulties
crazy day
today,
man, but it's all good, man.
Traffic on 59 was a bitch. Right?
Oh, man.
I was swinging. That's what happened.
Yeah,
I was swinging too hard.
Man, you know.
And
it's all good. I'm gonna go hop in the drop, and it's gonna be a good night. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely, definitely. Now you have the new project out, Ammunition, right?
Yeah,
featuring Dobeezy, Marcus
Manchild,
Saigon.
Yeah, Saigon. Yep.
Well, how'd you and Saigon link up?
Yeah, that's always been a homie, man. He always was real cool, man. I'd be having some like weird homies in the industry, man, that people be like, oh, you know him? But he's one of them people that, you know what I'm saying, I believe that's just, man, just cool, man. None of that industry stuff, man, you know. A lot of people you call and they be like on that, what's up, bro, when they just met you type stuff, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, it'd be some funny stuff, but he's cool, man.
And now, also, you had some vocals from Tammy Luttrell on that, right?
Oh, yeah, Tammy. Yeah, she was like the first person I actually got because we had did the Won't Change, and I needed somebody to sing on it, and then she was like, I got it. So she did it, and then I told her I would do some more work with her, and yeah, she was cool, man.
Now,
she's the homie, too. She's the homie. Yeah.
All right. Now, is this guy standing over here, the homie, Lelon?
Yeah, Lelon is the homie. The young homie, up-and-coming talent from H-Town with that voice, man.
Why'd you reach out to Lelon for the track?
Because he's just dope, man. Hey, this is the guy right here that you need to say, yes, that's him. He's the one who sent me the first thing on Lelon. I said, man, this guy's dope. So, KJ.
And then you say, I got to get him on the project.
Yeah. I was like, man, I'm going to hit him up. So I hit him up, and he was like, who? Come here? Like, no way. Stop playing. And I was like, yeah, for real. And then he was like, yeah, man, I'm there. Like, he did whatever I asked him to do. He came to the studio. So he's one of the few that I actually was in the studio with. Like, most people, I just send them stuff.
Yeah.
I don't have time, but he actually came to the studio and did with them.
Now, I know y'all dropped a lyric video for that song.
Yeah.
I asked him any plans on an actual video, because that's what I want.
Yeah.
And if you need, like, a nice-looking Caucasian fellow to stand in the background, like, I got you.
So, he said, nice looking. I'm not even just...
I'm nice looking. You see the hair, Cam?
Hey,
I don't know, man.
I don't know. You tell that to Paul Wall, man, and then y'all can battle and get the spot.
Me and Paul will battle. Paul Wall doesn't want anything with me. Trust me. I'm too street for Paul.
All right, I'll take your word for it.
Now, definitely. Now, I know Poison. The album Playlist Poison is coming out, right?
Yeah, everybody's waiting on that. And that's kind of what I'm doing. That's just taking me so much time while I'm growing a beard. Just that. Everything that I do with that revolves around that. You know what I'm saying? So, tomorrow, I actually leave to go work on that a little bit. And, a bunch of people waiting on it, man. It's just, all I can say is it takes a long time to just create a masterpiece, man. Like,
for sure.
Before, when I was on the major labels, they used to rush me and make me, you know, finish in and turn it in. But now there's no wait. I could take as long as I want and make sure that it's completely the way I want. And when I do that, fans normally like it. You know what I'm saying? Normally really love it when I take my time. So I'm shooting videos for every song and just, it's off the chain. That's why people don't see me releasing a lot of videos now, because I'm kind of saving it for the big
thing.
You're waiting.
Yeah. Now, I know the last release was Ultimate Victory.
Yeah.
2008, right?
Oh, I don't even know, man.
That's my job to know. It was 2008. Okay. I remember because you had the braids still. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it was a throwback.
Exactly.
Now, I remember jamming that album all the time. You had Slick Rick on there and everything. So what has changed in Chamillionaire's rapping style and life from Ultimate Victory all the way to Playlist Poison?
Ultimate Victory was just more of a concept than actually what, you know, I just do now. Now I just release a bunch of records, make a bunch of records that I think are cool. So it's not like anything changes in me that makes my music change. You know what I'm saying? Like, I always, if you paid attention, I always try to add a little bit of gems in the music. You know what I'm saying? But now, because I got older, I try to, like, add a little bit more purpose. And some fans that grew up with me that know about the punchlines, they just want me to punchline all day. But I personally don't listen to a lot of music like that. Like, if a person just punchlines every line, I don't listen to music like that. So it's not timeless. So I'm trying to find that balance with these fans that just love punchlines all day. And then you got new artists coming out, J. Cole, Kendrick Lamar, and they making music that just lasts. You know what
right?
I mean? And I like that type of music, but my fans won't let me make it. So I'm trying to find a balance, you know?
So, you know, you just mentioned J. Cole, Kendrick Lamar. Who else is one of the new, you know, rappers out now who you're like really, who Chamillionaire's really jamming?
Man, I honestly listen to a lot of stuff, but I don't, like, hold a lot of stuff. You know how, like, fans get of stuff and they listen to it all day and, like, 1,000 times? I, like, listen to it, I like it, and then it's like, okay, that's it. I don't never really stick with a bunch of stuff, because what happens subliminally is you, as a rapper, you automatically kind of start picking up things, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I try not to do that, you know what I'm saying? And then also, like, it's almost like, I said it the other day, I was talking to my homeboy, and I was like, man, you notice every song comes out, every rapper's, like, rapping like Ace Hood. Like that Ace Hood pattern. It's like, do they realize they're doing that, or they're just blatantly biting? But I don't want to do that, so I won't, you know, I won't listen to like Ace Hood 1,000 times, you know what I'm saying? I'll hear it and be like, man, it's a jamming song, and that's it. I move on. So I try not to kind of completely listen to somebody too much, but then I listen to enough to get a little inspiration or just kind of stay on my toes, because a lot of these youngsters, man, coming with some fire, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, so
definitely.
I gotta know what's out there, you know?
Now, my last question that I have for you, I know, like you said, Playlist Poison's coming out, and this is going to be your first album off of a major label, right?
No, I can't say that, because even though I'm doing it away from a major label, I can't say that it's not going to be a major situation for the album.
Oh, it's going to be major no matter what, because Chamillionaire's putting his name on it.
Yeah, but see, the thing about it is people get confused because I didn't get with a major, because the reason why to get away from a major is because they want me to make the music they want to make.
Yeah.
I want to make the music I want to make, and then after that, give it a major situation or a major distribution. So I'm not doing all this work and all these videos just to go drop the album, like, you know, in the barrios of, I don't know, you know what I'm saying? I'm
barrios
gonna do
it for real.
Friendswood, Texas, man. I'm trying to do it big. I want the world to hear it. So I got a plan for it, but I figure I do the whole thing first with no, you know, help from them or no, you know, just cheating, man. Yeah, distractions and, oh, we want you to go get this Gossip Girl singer and we want you to get this techno guy and, like, nah, man, I think I know what's dope. I've been doing this for like a decade, man.
I find it really hard to believe you don't watch Gossip Girl.
Nah, man, I've never seen that in my life. And it's funny because there's this girl that's like signed a Gossip Girl on the show and they wanted me to do a song with her. I was like,
it's
no disrespect, but yeah, it's not for me, man. You know,
Devo, well, I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, Poison is coming soon.
Poison's coming soon, man.
My flight tomorrow? Or the fight?
Mayweather, is that a question? Mayweather,
but I just said this one don't even count to me, man. You know what I'm saying?
Are you waiting for that Pac-Man Pacquiao?
Come, yeah. When Pac-Man come, then we'll see what's up. You know what I'm saying?
Well, definitely. Well, we're going to be sticking around for the show tonight. And I know you're going to bring it down. You're going to bring down the house.
Oh, yeah, it's going down, man. Straight up.
H-Town style. H-Town All-Stars. We got Chameleonaire. There's Brad Gilmore. Brad Gilmore Show. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Hold up, man. I like that watch, man.
Yeah, I like your chain. You want to switch?
Man, I think I got this watch, man. Oh, this is a different one. Okay.
We can trade.
Let's do it, man. Yeah, right.
What's up, everybody? This is your man, Brad Gilmore, a.k.a. Lord Trillmore, and I'm with my guy, the Duke of Debonair, Tay Mitch.
We want to invite you beautiful people out to the Debonair Lounge this Monday.
You'll be surrounded by positive vibes and hear the best live music in the city of Houston.
Just ask my man, Kirko.
What it do, man? It's Kirko, man. And every Monday, I need the whole city to come out. And my partner, Tay Mitch, and my partner, Brad Trillmore, is going down to the Debonair Lounge, man. Y'all know what it do.
Debonair Lounge, 4212 Alameda Road, doors at 9 p.m.
What's up, everybody? This is Brad Gilmore with The Brad Gilmore Show. I am sitting down with Bobby Digital, a.k.a. the leader and founder of the Wu-Tang Clan, also known as The RZA. We're here talking about his new movie, The Man with the Iron Fist, in theaters November 2nd. Now, RZA, I want to start by asking you something. I saw the trailer, and I noticed there was like a hint of comedy in it. Was that something that you and Eli Roth did intentionally when you were writing the script?
Yeah, yep. And Eli was especially helpful in that zaniness, because he's a zany guy. And I'm considered to be more serious, but I'm actually working on my comedy. And working on it. So, no, we definitely wanted humor, irony, as well as outrageousness. All these elements have to take place in the middle of this world because, you know, this is a fictional film based in a non-fiction environment, but we didn't want to take it so serious, you know what I mean? And so we added those elements, those comedic elements. And I remember one day we even just, you know, There's one scene when Russell and Lucy are going through their thing, right? And it says, you know, she's like, "You damage my girls, I damage your boys," right? But that scene, the way it was written already, but the way I wanted to shoot it, I figured it out like 2 days before I shot it, and I didn't tell the actors yet. And then when I figured out, I had to knock on his trailer first, and I was like, "Listen, you do that scene, I want you to get your nose and your lip so close to her that you can almost taste her, right?" Because they have no relationship like that, but I want them to like to get it. I said, "Dear, when you get that close to her, just stick your tongue out." And lick her lip. He looked at me. "Okay, is she cool with that, Bobby?" I said, "No way, I'm gonna talk to her next. I'll just make sure you're cool with it." I said, "I'm cool with it." Then I went to her, told her, and she said, "Is Russell cool with that?" I said, "Yeah, he cool."
Seeing as though this is your directorial debut, what kind of director do you want to be known as?
Serious director, like a person that really could take a story and put on this big screen and entertain the audience.
Okay.
Not just because, like, we see many movies come out every year, and sometimes we feel cheated out of our little $12. Now, I'm a movie buff. I go to the movies. Practically, when I'm home, every Wednesday is movie day. You know what I mean? For me and my wife, that's what we do. And it's hard to waver from that. And sometimes we go and I'm entertained, but a lot of times, you like, especially her, she's like, you know, and when she don't like something, you know, it really gets me. But I want to be able to make movies that entertain us first and foremost. Okay. And that can happen sometimes. Just a comedy could be stupid.
Yeah.
You know, no disrespect. This comedy, I ain't gonna say that this movie is stupid because I love this movie. But look at Pineapple Express. It's just have fun.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. But it's that 95 minutes you spent, you don't even know what we call the movie's about. All you know is that you had fun. So I want to be a guy that make sure that we make films that's entertaining and fun.
Now, you talked about, like, telling a story, and, you know, you're used to coming from, like, the music realm where you try to get your point across in a song, like, when you're producing a record in, like, 4 or 5 minutes. How was it making that transition from songs to making films? Like, how difficult was that?
I think it is more difficult to expand upon thoughts. Actually, in a song, because the songs are abstract, you could say in four lines, and the listener could figure it out. Take a Paul Simon song, 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover. He says, the problem is all inside your head, she said to me. The answer is easy if you take it. Say lightly. I'd like to help you in your struggles to be free. Explain 50 ways to leave your lover. That's four lines. The relationship is over.
Mm-hmm.
For writing a screenplay, it's not really all about the words sometimes. You know what I mean? Because it's visual. And that's where the difficult part comes at. To be able to have, you know, 30 seconds to 3 minutes of something you're looking at, and it holds you there. You know? You know, I looked at directors like John Woo, Quentin Tarantino, and Jim Jarmusch. And Quentin Tarantino is my mentor. But when I was with Jim Jarmusch, I noticed that he'll do long shots, that he'll just stay on the character sometimes. But sometimes so long that you begin to think what the character's thinking. You're trying to think what he's thinking. And now that may work, but it doesn't work on Hollywood movies because the attention span is always cut. We're trying to keep you moving. If you look at John Woo, and he have a long shot, the same thing, but everything is blowing up on that shot. The tissue is flying, the birds is moving. You stimulate it. Quentin will do the same thing, and the dialogue will be so intense that look at the Inglourious Basterds, and the guy that said the milk, and you watch him drink the milk. The milk in that movie seemed like it was ice cold, didn't it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's probably hot as fists. So there's different ways that they bring it. So me, I try to incorporate some of these styles and make sure that when you're looking at a film, my film, you got some eye candy that's making you just, wow, a lot of things going. Or here go a few lines that make you get your laugh off. Or here go just a scene. You know what I mean? Just look at, like when the Gemini Killers ride into town in this movie, they ride into town and the music is playing. And for a moment, I know it's going to work on the audience because it works on me. For a moment, you just kind of sit back and go, ah, oh, it's nice. And they're just coming in, pretty girl, guy. And the whole scene is just them riding into town. I take it all the way till they get off their horses. That's bold to hold a shot that long, you know what I mean? But, you know, it worked. I think you guys will like it.
Now, you talked about Quentin Tarantino being a sensei of sorts. Could you kind of like divulge more details on you and Quentin's relationship and the making of this film?
Yeah, we was working on Kill Bill. We had became friends early on, and when he worked on when he wrote the screenplay for Kill Bill, he had gave me a copy, and I read it, and then I was like, wow, this is incredible. And we hung around each other for, you know, maybe 2 years at this point, and I just recognized in him a unique talent of encyclopedia knowledge of film. A man who had my same love for certain genres, saw spaghetti western and martial art, but a man who had thousands of other films in his catalog and in his brain. And I said, yo, as you go direct this film, I like to be your student. Could you mentor me? And he said, sure, Bobby, be my pleasure. And I flew to Beijing, and on the set of Kill Bill, I just sit up in that, like a high seat we had, it was like a balcony almost, and I'd be there with a composition notebook, writing notes, and I did that for the first 30 days. Then I went to Mexico and did it again for a couple more weeks. And same thing on Death Proof, I flew down to Austin, and also many nights at his house. The coolest thing for me though was on the set of The Man with the Iron Fist, Quentin comes to China. And he's sitting there at Video Village, and he says, Bobby, this is full circle. Remember, it started in China, Beijing, you and that black notebook sitting up there, and now look. The student has become a master.
Now, Now, there's been a lot of, you know, MCs and hip-hop guys who've transitioned in the movie world, you know, like M and 36 Mafia won their Academy Award, you know, 50 Cent. Do you feel like movies and hip-hop go together, and you feel like that's the next logical step to move the culture forward, for you at least?
Yeah, I think me personally, I'm definitely going to continue to make films. I don't know if every hip-hop artist could do it, because I don't know if they all prepared themselves for the task.
Yeah.
Looking at a man that, you know, even from this story, Iron Fist, this is starting in 2005, and then we finally get this visualized in 2012. But through that period of time, you're looking at a guy who studied, read books, watched movies, deciphered movies, spent time with some of the elite directors, acted in over 12, 13 films, and appeared on TV. So I had a chance to really learn it. So I do see myself as being one of the hip-hop brothers that will open up the possibility of a hip-hop artist doing it. But you just can't do it because you're a hip-hop artist.
Yeah.
You just can't do it because you sold millions of records and you're famous. That's something that when Sam Jackson was complaining about hip-hop artists getting acting jobs some years ago, he challenged me actually to go and learn this craft instead of taking it on face value. So I went and got an acting coach and I got books and I studied the Susan Bassin School of Acting, which goes way back to the Russian School of Acting. And I went forward to learn it so that when I do it, Sam was not going to look at me and say, I'm not a thespian. You know what I mean? And then on Django, I had a chance to sit down and kick it with him and talk. And you know, he basically was like, boy, go ahead and put the wig on and do Afro Samurai. You ready now? But he sees that, you know, that I have the artistic qualities of an actor. It's not a, you know, it's a very small circle of actors in the world. Mm-hmm. Artists, period. I'm going to share this with y'all real quick. If you look at the Directors Guild, it's only 3,000 members. Look at SAG, maybe there's 100,000 members, you know? The Writers Guild, maybe you get 5,000, 6,000 members. Mm-hmm. You add all these numbers together, let's just say you end up with 200,000 people. Out of 7 billion, this is the core of that talent. You take journalists, same thing you guys are. Maybe if you find 1 million of them, that's out of 7 billion. You divide that into 7 billion, you lose it. Same thing with artists and singers. Let's say the whole world, from journalists to artists to singing to dancing to, let's say we find 5 million of us. You divide that into 7 billion, it's lost. So we have a rare thing we do. Mm-hmm. And the more you enhance that talent, the more rare you become. So now we take a person like Russell Crowe, who's in the Man with the Iron Fist, and there's less than 100 men in history who says, best male leading actor, Oscar. Less than 100 men got that power and got that title, you know? So, you know, it's something we should take serious, and I take it serious, and I respect the craft of it, and I, like I said, I put my time and I studied, and I basically walked away from an empire to do this, basically. If I look at it, my brother come here right now, he'll tell you.
Now, when working on the soundtrack for the album, you know, you collaborated with all your Wu-Tang brothers and Kanye West and whatever, but when working with the Wu-Tang brothers, did it spark, you know, that interest to do another Wu-Tang project?
Actually, it didn't spark that interest yet. We have next year's our 20th year anniversary, and I've been reaching out to the guys, you know, to make that year special. November 2013 will be the 20th anniversary of Into the 36 Chambers, the album that we brought to the world that made us who we are and put our names on the map and helped change the world in its own way. But hopefully the guys will see, hopefully everybody, I mean, some brothers do see it, me and Ghost, we talk about it, me and Matt, we talk about it at different times. Hopefully everybody will see the importance of us coming together, no matter what we do, whether it's a concert, an album, or just appearance on Good Morning America. Whatever it is, we need to come together and show the fans who supported us that we respect their support. We change this forever, we said it. We can't be talking no bull crap. We gotta live it out. So, but this particular project, because I mean, Jimmy Fallon invited us to perform a song about the soundtrack on Monday or Tuesday, and I'm hearing that some of the guys ain't making it on Jimmy Fallon. So I'm like, well, they're not ready yet. You know what I mean? So that's just for your knowledge.
Any interest in an actual Wu-Tang movie, maybe?
Yeah, I think actually a few of us have ideas that we jot down. So I know Raekwon may be writing some ideas, Jizza writing some ideas, myself. So we see if life gives us that blessing.
Now, how do you want people to feel when they listen to the movie as well as watch it?
Well, I'm from the old school, as they say, and I'm a record collector. And when I collect these soundtracks from the 70s, like Shaft or Claudine or Superfly, you know what I mean? Or even Brothers with Taj Mahal. When you get these albums, Coffee, Voyeurs, the music matches the film. You can put the album on and almost see the film in your head. So when I did Ghost Dog, I took it the same way.
Okay.
And now that the Man with the Iron Fist, my idea is that, yeah, you should be able to put this CD in or download it to your computer, whatever you do, and envision the film. I had a writer talk to me in DC who got an early copy of the score and soundtrack, and he said he think he saw the movie. So I was like, okay, well, and that was just him telling me that. I said, yo, I'm gonna tell you, man, let's just go. It's like, I saw the movie. I was like, well, I guess it worked.
Yeah.
But that's the main plan for a score or a soundtrack, is to make you feel like you're getting that movie experience again in your car.
Now, how is it though, like, because I know the movie's set in like old school 19th century China, and like, how is it when like an audience member is watching the movie and then they see like a current star, a current hip-hop star, R&B star, like pop up in the movie? Like, how do you make that fit?
Well, I didn't worry about the time period. Being a Tarantino student and from that school, I knew that I could break certain rules, you know what I mean? So you're looking at Glorious Bastard, which is in the 40s, and David Bowie came on. So I just knew that I could break that rule, and I broke it. But I think the way I broke it, it still captures you, and it captures your imagination in the film. You know, in other words, here Kanye West in the movie, and he is in the movie, it's not gonna take you out of the scene, because it was written for the scene, it was properly planned for the scene, and so therefore it fits the scene. There's other cues in the movie that sound just like, you know, Asian sound. There's some that sound like, there's one crazy hardcore hip hop beat from a Wu-Tang album that we changed around, and we had John Frusciante on lead guitar, Chavo Adagio from System of a Down on bass, and it's rumbling, all these guitars, but it's a big fight scene, but it just sucks you into it, you know what I mean? So, that's very different. That's what makes this film unique, though. The trick I think I did here, and the trick that the studio also paid attention to, was the Asian brothers and sisters make 50 to 100 of these movies a year.
Yeah.
Whether you come from Singapore, Thailand, Hong Kong, Japan, these films come out all the time. Korea. What makes mine different? Who wanna give an American guy a shot to do what these guys do every day? Well, they don't got hip-hop. They don't got that. You know what I'm saying? They don't have this American sensibility to where 85-90% of this film is English-speaking actors, even though they're Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
There's a generation of actors now who can speak English. But they have to, like Daniel Wu, who's one of the biggest stars in China, he has to speak Chinese in every one of his movies, but he's from Oakland. You know what I mean? So now he gets to speak his English in my movie. None of these films have the Quentin Tarantino accessibility. This is why Quentin Tarantino presents it. It separates us automatically. But being able to throw that hip hop music in there and have fun with it changes the game.
So, like, what are some martial arts movies that you watch either during, before, or even after this movie that you really enjoy, you know, watching?
Well, I'm always watching martial arts films. So, of course, I like Ip Man, 14 Blades, Detective D, and the Holy Flame. The Raid is crazy. I saw The Raid doing editing. They actually bought The Raid to me.
Okay.
They screened it to me. Because they wanted my opinion. No, this shit is crazy. The Raid is dope. If I was to be a movie critic, I said, what's the problem with The Raid? The acting. You know what I mean? It's like, the quality of acting is not there.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a cast member at the level of a Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
So that's another element that I added to the Asian film. And me and Russell had talked about this, because he had called me up and he was like, Bobby, I'm not doing no kung fu. I said, listen, bro. I got Dave Bautista, Kung Lee, Rick Yung, Gordon Liu. I got all the kung fu I need in this movie. What I need from you is that quality acting ability that only you could bring. You know what I mean? So I knew what I needed inside my stew. I knew I had all these ingredients, but I had to have this special spice to make it delicious.
Well, I know RZA, bro. I know you worked with Pam Grier on the movie. How was it getting her on the film and, you know, interacting with Pam Grier, the queen of, like, black exploitation films?
That was a blessing, yo, a pure honor. She's such a lady. I'm such a fan of hers. You know, when I told my wife about the cast of this movie, you know, I'm in China, and we still, you know, people, the producers are negotiating, you know, and it's a big process to get put in the film, but I learned that the hard way. Well, I'll say one last thing. I may never want to do another screen test again after looking at people's screen tests from a group of people and like, oh my God, fashion. I don't know if I ever want to do it again. But anyway, so I call home to my wife. I'm like, yeah, baby. So Russell's on. And Lucy's on.
Oh, cool.
You know, Rick, they agreed to Rick. I got Daniel. I got Gordon Liu, baby. One of my favorite actors. Oh, that's nice, baby. Baby, and we got Pam. Pam, Pam. Oh, baby, this is gonna be great. So that's how important it was. I told Pam that too. I said, man, you're the only one that made my wife smile about being in the movie. And she was a great lady. She had so many good things to tell us. I did something funny. I'll share this with y'all. I don't know how you'll decipher it, but there's an old martial art movie that Bruce Lee made called Return of the Dragon.
Yeah.
He fights Chuck Norris. All right, that movie's about the white guy comes to take over the Chinese restaurant. Okay, I got that white guy. And I, John, plays this thing with Pam Grier. So I put the 270 exploitation people together in one scene. So I did a lot of tricks in this movie that's like cinema foul things that you'll see, like, oh, he put that in there just for the moviegoers to realize, you know. And I pay homage to films, and you'll notice when I'm paying homage, and you also will notice when, wow, this guy's imagination is quite his own.
Now, in the trailer, we don't see a lot about your character Blacksmith, let alone any action scenes. So how was it being able to get in there, embrace your inner Staten Island, and, you know, kick a little ass during the film?
Well, no, the character, the Blacksmith, is actually a very humble character.
Oh, okay.
So, I actually took the role in Californication last season just so that people don't mistake me for this guy. You know what I mean? Honestly, yeah. I was like, man, I got to do something else. And this guy is very, very eternal, you know what I mean? But he has something that's useful, you know what I mean? And you'll discover in the film that he has something that's very useful, and he's learned something that's very important. And that's the only part of him I could resonate with myself when I was being stupid as a young adult, you know, between the age of 19 and 21, I guess. Is that I had all this common sense and read all these books and had all this so-called wisdom, but I was doing stupid shit every day. You know what I mean? And it wasn't until a tragedy happened to me where I almost lost my whole life and lost everything that I have today from a foolish mistake. I was able to escape that mistake and live another day, and I never turned back negative again. I stayed positive throughout the course. And that's something I could say is a part of that character that I could agree with and I see. You know what I mean? It wasn't even planned like that. It's just when I watched the film, I go, oh yeah, that's some shit. Like my own, you know, life imitating art and art imitating life.
For those who didn't experience kung fu films as a child, what do you want them to take from this movie?
Well, one thing, I think it's a good film, even if you take all the kung fu out, you got a good film,
okay.
Right? But I would love the people who haven't watched kung fu and don't know the genre that we're bringing to find a love for this stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, I would love young people to feel like, you know, even though this movie is, you know, it's Eli Roth, so you know we got some gore, all right? But I would love for young people, you know, to fight with their hands. They learn martial art. You know, when Karate Kid came out, it caused a little boom of people joining karate schools. In Bruce Lee days, it made a boom of it. Hopefully, you know, this may even give a spark of it, man, because the gun violence and all that stuff that's happening out there is ridiculous. You know, I was a kid, we had Saturday morning Kung Fu dinner. You guys don't got that no more. You know what I mean? But it's in some of those movies that you find loyalty, brotherhood, sacrifice, fight against oppression. You know what I mean? As well as just some cool ass kicking. And that's missing, you know? And I think that this film is like a film to bring it back. It won't be Saturday mornings, it'll be more like Friday and Saturday nights. But I would love to see more of this. Also, one more thing. When Kill Bill came out, did we all like Kill Bill here at this time?
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
Okay, did we all like Kill Bill? All right, so that was the last American film that focused on martial art. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the last one that had real money on it, real people in it. And here's the next one. So how many years later, y'all? I don't think it should be this far apart. Even when I decided to do the movie, when I told Quinn I'm ready to be a director, mm-hmm. he gave me some advice. He said, well, maybe you should start with a small movie at a certain amount of money and just, you know, do something simple. I didn't. I went for the big one, you know what I mean? because I noticed, though, and I'll just leak this on the commercial level, I said, Quinn, when we did Kill Bill, it was successful. Mm-hmm. Everybody saw it, probably made a couple hundred million dollars with it. And yet now, we can't even get a Kung Fu movie on you know, like when Curse of the Golden Flower came out, it couldn't even play on 100 screens. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I said, so there's a market for people who's hungry for this stuff. Mm-hmm. If you don't fulfill it, well, let your student do it. He said, okay, you take it. You know, he's going on to other things. So I said, I'd love to take over that genre. And, you know, I come with the iron fist. And I said, this is the only kind of films I want to make. I got a lot of ideas. But if I only made these kind of films, I'd still be satisfied.
So I heard in the 1990s, you actually had a movie that you wrote and wanted to make. Whatever happened with that?
Bobby Digital. I actually wrote that as no script. I just wrote like two pages, and I shot it, and I got it. It's in my archives as one of my amateur films.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's gonna ever leak out. If it do, I won't be embarrassed. Now I realize, you know, it's like thinking of the old music days when we had only turntables and 606 drum machines, and now we got big samplers and Logic on our computers to make music. So, but it was an amateur film called Bobby Digital. I did another amateur film I did called Wu-Tang versus the Golden Phoenix. But the Wu-Tang versus the Golden Phoenix, some of the footage from that, I edited together into a trailer. Mm-hmm. And it was that which helped me get the people to believe that I could do the Man with the Iron Fist. Mm-hmm. They saw that I had some knowledge of action and talent, and I was also able to get Asian actors to work with me, you know what I mean? Which is sometimes difficult for us, you know, to get people to work for us, one reason or another, but I had the sensibility, and the Chinese government has to clear every movie. They have to read your script and clear it. Mm-hmm. One thing about this movie, which it is fiction, but you also will notice that we don't really mention too many authentic Chinese things. We couldn't even say Peking duck. Mm-hmm. It was in the script, it was like Peking duck. Like, no, you can't say Peking duck. Peking duck is real. Okay. It's a tradition of theirs. It's one of their big foods. I couldn't even say Shaolin. And I'm a student of Shaolin. I've been to Shaolin Temple. I've been ordained a Shaolin disciple. And I couldn't say it because Shaolin is real. So I had to change the name of my temple to Wu Chi.
The government wouldn't allow you?
Yeah, it wouldn't allow that.
Well,
because they're protecting their culture.
Yeah.
And this is a movie that's a piece of fiction. And it can't be like, oh, this, because people watch movies and believe it. So gotcha. They're protecting their culture, and I respected it.
Right.
So why do you think, like, Kung Fu movies don't translate to the United States audience? Like, they're not as popular here in the States.
Well, I think that because they're made from their perspective, their sensibility. You know, the Asian, like I said this earlier to a guy, like you'll watch the Asian, especially in the 80s or 70s, they have a scene where the guy gets up late, he has to take a piss, he pisses in the piss holder, and then he's kind of still sleeping, and she's like, from you, bring me some tea. That's not that. It's funny, but it ain't that funny. It's funny for a kid.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, there's certain sensibilities that they have in their films that doesn't resonate with how we make our films. So the same thing with, you know, I mean, well, our films actually do well in Asia, which is weird. But I don't know, it's just something I think that that's an ingredient that hopefully that Iron Fist will do well and they will watch it and enjoy it as well. Maybe they pick up a trick from me because I picked up some of these tricks from them. Maybe they go, okay, we have to add a little bit of this to our stuff or pull back on this or know when it's serious, know when it's funny, and know when it's kung fu. Personally, how I feel about this film this time, let me tell you how I feel about this film this time of the year. I feel like there's two holidays, Thanksgiving and Christmas. I have your Thanksgiving turkey right here, the mail guy. And it's presented by Quentin Tarantino. And then Quentin Tarantino comes back on Christmas Day with the Christmas turkey.
Right, right.
These two films should be the best two rated R movies of the fourth quarter, and the funnest.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I honestly believe that. And I know I got some nice ingredients in mind that's going to uphold. And I know he got some crazy ingredients in his. So it's going to be fun.
Sounds like some good meals.
The cranberry sauce, kid.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, I want to thank y'all very much.
Thank you. Hi, this is Booker T, 5-time WCW champion, and you're listening to the Brad Gilmore Show. Hey, check out Reality of Wrestling on the Booker T ROW on YouTube. Like I always say, now can you dig that, sucker?
Let's play a little game. Hold your eyes and call my name. I'll turn around and count to 10. Baby, I know you'll let me win. Ain't nobody gotta know. Just a couple calls. I promise I won't pay for me. Let's play a game of hide and seek. Hide and seek.
Go pick you up when you do, threw you out like recycle. I just wanna see if you're worth more than one night though. If you the type of girl I can drop my whole life for, see, I'm trying to see if you're into things, you know, little games. When that ass get tame, you act all shoddy, you scream my name. When you act like it hurt, but you like the pain. I mean, I'm the type of guy if you're down for that. We can role play box and go around to that. I may be a little twist of right hand on ass, and we speed it up while we make it last. Woo! Now let's slow it down. I close my eyes and you'll lose that gown. I won't peek or make a sound. You say you lost passion when that's found. I'm trying to make your whole body feel crazy. Get lost up in the things, but you call amazing. Then we can go all night and even till the days. And all we can see is what's crazy.
Let's play a little game. Hold your eyes and call my name. I'll turn around and count to 10. Baby, I know you let me win. Ain't nobody gotta know. Just a couple calls.
Peek-a-boo, girl, you know I'm feeling you. Soon as you walked in the room, you knew I got a Pikachu. Now I call you Pikachu, cause you about to get chose. Pick you up and take you home, this is all a player knows. And I leave it all behind. I mean, you always on my mind. I swear you always looking fine. I mean, I like the way you look. Could get you open like a book. All the things that we could do. You know, we always knocking boots in. Yeah, I know you know the rules. I turn around, I count to 10. Ready or not, here I come. Baby, let them game begin. You came first, you came to win. You came for love, you left for sin. We can play this game again.
Again and again and again.
We can play the game fast or play the game slow. Baby, all you gotta do is let me know.
Thank you for tuning into the Brad Gilmore Show this week. We hope you enjoyed our holiday special with interviews from the RZA and Chamillionaire that have never been played or heard in their entirety on the Brad Gilmore Show on demand. Make sure y'all tune in next week. We're going to have a brand new show for y'all. Me, DJ Motime Peaches are going to rock it out like we always do. Follow us on social media at Brad Gilmore, at Brad Gilmore Show, at DJ Motai, that's M-O-T-A-I, and Tatala Peaches, at Tatala Peaches, T-A-T-A-L-A-P-E-A-C-H-E-Z. Y'all tune in next week, hashtag The BG Show.
What's going down? It's your homie Dope Beezy, the Southeast Beast, and make sure you tune in to the Brad Gilmore Show.